there are content that I don't have to show that I showed yesterday. So there are about, I don't know, probably about 40, 50%. So probably I'll just, move a little quickly for the first half of the presentation, and then move on to, the topics about, how you can run Docker or container workloads at scale on Azure. But to start with, this is kind of the agenda. We'll kind of go slow and fast on different parts of this. Spend a few minutes talking about what Docker exactly is, what containers are all about. Talk about Docker on Windows and Docker support for Docker on Azure. And then, talk about orchestration and what are some of the tools that we have available today that you can use and leverage to run your container workloads at scale on Azure. So what is Docker? So if you go to docker.io, this is what they say about themselves, right? They say Docker is an open platform for developers and sysadmins to build, ship, and run distributed applications. One interesting thing about that definition is it doesn't mention containers anywhere, right? So that's what it really is ultimately about, right? The fact that it runs on containers is probably not as important as the fact that this is a platform that, as developers and at sysadmins, you can use to build, ship, maintain, deploy your applications. The technology, the Docker as a technology itself is based or it's rooted in a Linux capability, right? The concept of a container is basically enabled by a set of technologies in Linux. To start with, the Linux kernel has always supported for a fairly long time now a concept called as namespaces. The basic idea is that a namespace in Linux is essentially an abstraction that allows you to isolate resources that are there on a particular device, right? So if you, for example, right, imagine that you want to launch a process and you want to constrain the parts of the file system that process has access to, right? Like, for example, let's say that you create a folder. In that folder, you put a bunch of subfolders and other files, and you want to launch process A, and you want to say that this process will have only access to this one single folder on my file system, right? What that means is, for the code that is running inside that process, if it calls the system API calls to enumerate the file system, like get the list of the mount points and look at the files and so forth, it will only see that particular folder. It won't even be aware. Like, system API call will not even return data from the other parts of the file system. Right? It's essentially a sandbox. So just like that, you can create namespaces where processes are constrained in what they view for other processes that are running on the system. Right? If process A running in a particular namespace enumerates the list of processes, it will only see the processes that you have configured for that namespace. You won't see the processes that are there in other processes that are there on that machine. Likewise for network, right? So network cards, you can provide a similar kind of a sandbox environment where the processes running inside the particular namespace only see the network interfaces that you have made available for that namespace, right? So this is a feature that is there in Linux, in the Linux kernel itself. Another feature like this is called as C groups. C groups stands for control groups, and the basic idea here is you are able to launch processes on the operating system and constrain how much access it has to different resources, right? So for example, you can say that process A is being launched in a particular C group, and it will have only access to one of your four CPU cores, right? Or you can say that this process will have only 1 gigabyte of memory can be used by this process. It simply does not have access to more memory than 1 gigabyte, right? And so forth. Disk I/O, you can limit disk I/O. You can limit network access. You can limit access to devices that are connected to your host operating system. So this is a feature called as control groups, where the basic idea is about limiting access to resources. And the third thing that you need to know about is something called as a union mount file system. An implementation of which is fairly popular, is called AUFS, another union mount file system. The basic idea behind a union mount file system is essentially that you are able to create virtual file systems that are stacked on top of other file systems, right? So, for example, right, from your root partition, you can say that I have folders A, B, and C, possibly in different paths, and I can stack a file system, a virtual file system, on top of that and mount it at a particular mount point, let's say slash MNT slash A. And inside of that mount point, you will basically create a merged view of these three folders that you have created, right? So I have three folders, folders A, B, and C. They could be on the same machine. They could be a network. They could be hosted on the network somewhere. I can create this virtual view of all these disparate sources of data, like this disparate file sources, and then create a unified view of it at a particular mount point on that machine. So if you go and list the files that are there in that mount point, you will see a merged view of all the sources that you have identified for that mount point, right? So this basic idea is called as AUFS. So containers, Linux containers are basically a way of taking all of these three technologies and combining them and calling them as a container. Right? That's what it ultimately is. So what you will note here is they are just processes, right? They are just like you're on Windows, you're launching Notepad or Calculator or VI or Nano or whatever, right? So those are just processes. Containers, at the end of the day, are simply processes. You're just launching a process. That's all they are. They are different from regular processes in the sense that they're running inside of a sandboxed environment. They are limited in what resources they can access. They are limited in how much of those resources they can access. They might have their own private view of the file system that you have created for that container. So they are limited in certain ways, but then ultimately they are just processes or sets of processes, right? You can create. So that's what a container ultimately is. It creates isolation boundaries. So what is another technology that allows you to create isolation boundaries? VMs, right? So virtual machines. So the natural question is, how are they different from containers? Like how are containers different from virtual machines? So this is a standard kind of a comparison diagram that you might have seen before. The basic idea or the biggest difference is the fact that on your right or on your left, you see virtual machines. At the bottom of it, you see that layer called as host OS and the hypervisor, right? And then stacked on top of that, you have two applications which are running in their own private copies of the guest operating system. So the basic idea there is every app that you're running on a particular host gets its own copy of the entire operating system, right? You get your own copy of the kernel. With containers, that is not the case. You have the machine, you have the host OS, you have a Docker engine or the daemon that is actually managing your containers, and then on top of that, you have your applications. That's it, right? So that makes containers somewhat lightweight. Very lightweight. Like it's comparing the overhead of launching a VM vis-a-vis overhead of launching a process, right? So it's incredibly fast relative to VMs. So that's what containers are. So what is Docker? So Docker is essentially a tool that makes the job of making use of namespaces, control groups, AUFS, all of this, like if you have to deal with them yourself, it can be fairly complicated. So Docker is essentially a tool that makes dealing with this abstraction called containers really, really straightforward. So that's what Docker is about. So it basically uses technologies that are already there in Linux, right? So so Docker introduces this concept of an image, which is defined, which is basically a very simple text file where you say what dependencies your application has. And then Docker is a tool that can take that image description and then spin up containers for you, right? So there are a bunch of terms that are useful to know when you talk about Docker. So there is something called the Docker host. That is essentially the engine which is responsible for creating containers on your behalf on a particular host. There is the Docker client. The Docker client is what you use to talk to the Docker host. So think of Docker host like if you use a web application as an example, Docker host is the equivalent of the web server, right? So that is what is serving a handling request. And Docker client is the equivalent of a browser, right? So you use the Docker client to communicate to the Docker host and tell the Docker host, go ahead and deploy this container, connect this container to this container or whatever, right? So basically, the client is what you use to communicate with the host, and that's a CLI. There is the Docker image. Like I was saying earlier, an image is basically the description of what a particular container should look like, right? So you say that my container will have these binaries, it'll have this library, it needs these environment variables, it needs access to these file volumes, and so on and so forth. So you define an image to say exactly what your app needs, and then you know, you instruct the Docker host to go ahead and deploy that container on your behalf. Docker containers are the, you know, those are the abstract, that's the sandbox environment in which your application runs. The Docker file is the description of your image. That's, you can think of it as the make file for Docker, right? So that describes how to build an image, how to run an image. Another thing that Docker introduces is the Docker Hub. That really is the biggest selling point for Docker, I would imagine, right? So the Docker ecosystem. So more than the technology itself, the community has really gotten behind Docker as a technology. So the Docker Hub is essentially a registry that is maintained by the by Docker, Docker Inc., the company Docker. And there is a lot of traction in the industry, right? So there's a, there are a lot of companies getting behind it. There are over 80,000 images already in the Docker Hub, right? So that was an extremely rapid introduction to what Docker is about. So let's take a look at what it takes to run Docker. Now, or maybe before I jump into that, let me just. Okay, so let me just talk about Docker Machine as well, and then I can kind of show you both of them together. So I talked about a Docker CLI, right? The CLI that you use to talk to a Docker host that is running on a Linux machine. Now, you might ask, how do you get a Docker host to begin with, right? So I need a machine, a physical machine or a virtual machine, on which I have the Docker daemon running, the Docker engine running. So how do you get that? Now, it could be a physical machine that you have created on premises, you have installed a distribution of Linux on it, you have installed Docker on it, and then you can administer it using the Docker client from anywhere you like. The Docker project also provides a tool to make this job really, really easy for you if you're dealing with virtual machines. If you want to use a virtual machine as the host in which your Docker engine is running, then Docker Machine is a CLI tool that you can use to create, to spin up your virtual machines and to maintain your virtual machines, spin them up, spin them down, connect to them, and so forth. So Docker Machine supports a wide range of drivers. So you can use Machine to create virtual machines VMs with Docker pre-installed and configured on a wide variety of backends, on AWS, on GCE, on VMware. And we, you know, we at Microsoft have added support for Hyper-V. So you can use Machine to spin up Linux VMs with Docker pre-installed on Hyper-V, right? Microsoft's virtualization platform. And you can also use Machine to spin up virtual machines with Docker pre-installed on Azure. Right, so that's what we have added support for Machine for making these things possible, and the port, and we have also ported Machine to Windows, so you can actually run both the Docker CLI and the Machine CLI from a Windows box. Right, you don't need a Linux machine or a Mac machine to run the Docker CLI itself or the Machine CLI. So that's Docker Machine. So let's take a look at both of these quickly. So here I have a Windows box. So let me just open here. So here I have got the binaries, the Windows binaries for both Docker and Machine. You can go to the Docker GitHub project and you can get access to these binaries. It's github.com/docker. And then you can get the binaries for whatever operating system you're running. If you're on Windows, you can get Windows binaries. You have binaries available for OS X and Linux as well. So I've gotten the Windows binaries here. So first, let's take a look at Machine, right? So all right, so Machine essentially is a CLI here. Let me just make this a little bigger. So it supports a bunch of commands here. So for example, if I want to see the list of machines that I have created already, I say machine list, ls. I think I'm in the wrong folder. So here when I say machine ls, it basically goes ahead and lists the number of Docker hosts that I've already created. You know, I created these before the session. So if I want to you know, basically SSH into one of these machines. I can simply say machine SSH. So in this output, it lists three VMs. You will notice that in the driver column, it tells you what is the driver that was used when these VMs were spun up. So in the first two cases, I used Hyper-V, which means that those are actually running on the local server here. So there you can see that these two VMs are actually running on Hyper-V. And the third Docker host here is running on Azure. So this is running, and you see that the URL is on a cloudapp.net URL. And the star here means that is the currently active machine. That's basically a machine concept. So the idea is, for example, if I say machine IP, right, I can get the IP address of the machine. So which machine will it return? The active one. So in this case, it gave me the IP address of Nerd Docker VM6, which is on Azure. So if I want to open a SSH connection to that particular machine, I can simply say machine SSH, and then it basically reaches out to, in this case, the machine that is running in Azure, and gives me a shell from where I can, you know, start working on that particular machine. There we go. Took a while. So here, what can we do, right? So let me jump into a root shell. So I can run Docker. So Docker is the CLI, like I was saying earlier. So if you want to see what images are already running on a particular machine, you can say Docker PS. Docker PS is essentially listing the list of running containers on this machine. Let's take a look at running a simple Ubuntu shell, maybe. Do we have a question? Can you hold for just 1 second? Can we hand a mic to the gentleman, please? Great.
See, this is a Docker container. When you say Docker images, it shows Docker images. When you say Docker PS, it shows the container. When you say Docker PS hyphen A, it shows all the containers, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what you say, sir, this is image. This is not image. This is container, right?
Docker PS shows you the list of running containers.
Right. So yes. You say images last time.
Okay. Thank you. So PS shows you running containers. Images shows you images. So if you say Docker images, that shows you the images that I've already got on this particular machine. So for example here, I can say Docker run IT Ubuntu bash, right? So in this case, what happens is Docker goes ahead and gets the image for Ubuntu, right? Downloads that and creates a container of that particular image on this host. And then I've given bash as the value, right? The command that needs to be run inside that container. So essentially what it's going to do is it's going to open a bash shell for me, and then I can, you know, go into that container and do things. Opening a bash into a container is probably not the most intended use case for Docker. You typically want to run your workloads remotely, but then that is possible, right? To kind of show you that it is actually, you know, you can actually go into that container and, you know, take a look at what's going on. Looks like there was a newer version of Ubuntu since I did this last. So it downloaded that. So where is it downloading it from? It's downloading it from the Docker Hub, the registry that I was talking about earlier, right? It's still thinking about it. So while it is thinking about it, let me just open up another shell. I think I've got it here. Okay. All right. So that was a very quick demo of running Docker machine and Docker from, at least the machine part was on Windows. I ran Docker after I SSH'd into the VM, but it works just as fine. Like, there is a Docker CLI that you can run from Windows machines as also. Okay, so what happened to the projection here? This is that problem. Okay. Can you have the mic? Okay, there we go. All right, so it's not working on full screen for some reason. So so we very quickly saw that, right? So we used machine to, I didn't show you spinning up the VM, but just as we did machine LS and machine SSH, there is machine create. In fact, probably I should just quickly show you that that as well. So you can do machine create, and then you will here see that it has support for a wide variety of backends. So I'll just grep for just Azure. So here these are the Azure options, right? So you can specify what Azure image you want to use, what location, what password if you want to use password, publish setting port, and so on and so forth. So you can say machine create, provide all of these options, and then machine will go ahead and set up a VM for you, right? So if you want to see what that kind of looks like. So that's the command prompt, right? That's the command line for spinning up a new VM. So in this case, essentially I've said that use the Azure driver, right? So the driver is Azure. I've specified my subscription certificate, which I've already uploaded in my Azure portal, which subscription ID you want to use, and what is the name of the VM, right? So there are default options for pretty much all of the other options, like location, VM size, and so forth. But you can certainly override that and provide your own values as well. So in this case, it's going ahead and talking to Azure and spinning up the VM for me, and it will go and install Docker on it. All right. So I showed you machine. We also have support for launching virtual machines with Docker pre-installed using the cross-platform CLI as well. If you attended Madan's session previously, I think he showed you a little bit of a demo of how you can do that. So let's go back here. There you go. That Ubuntu. This is the Bash shell inside of that Ubuntu container inside of Docker. Right, so I'll just exit out of that. So you can say Azure VM Docker create. Right, so this is another extension to the VM create command in the cross-platform CLI. It gives you a bunch of options. Essentially, the idea is you can go ahead and specify. What it essentially does is it goes and creates a virtual machine for you and installs the Docker extension, the Docker VM extension. Again, Madan's briefly referred to Azure virtual machine supporting this concept of extensions, right? So he talked about extensions for Chef, for Docker, for custom scripts. So there is an extension for Docker. And what it does is it essentially sets up Docker on your VM for you, right? So Azure VM Docker create, what it does is it goes and creates the VM and installs the Docker extension onto that VM so that you get a VM with Docker pre-installed and ready to go, right? So all set for you. If you want to use a browser interface to do this sort of thing, then you can go to the Azure Marketplace. So you can go to azure.com. Go to Marketplace, this link at the top. So here it shows you a vast collection of images that you can use, images and various services that you can use. I'll just search for Docker. And here you can see that there is a pre-created, pre-baked image ready to use called Docker on Ubuntu Server. So you can go ahead and click on that link. And then you can go and click on this virtual machine, the big green button. And then it goes ahead and starts provisioning a virtual machine with Docker installed for you, somewhat easier than using a CLI if you don't like CLIs. So here it's basically opening up the Azure portal, and then it goes and goes ahead and starts and creates the VM for you. So that was a rapid introduction into what is the Docker support on Windows and Windows Azure on and Microsoft Azure, right? So the next topic that I want to talk about was about container orchestration. Now, running individual containers is all nice and fine, right? So you can take a particular image, you can spin up a container, and you can use that application on a single host. Now that is great. But what if you have an application, which is what is a typical case is going to be, right? So you will have multiple tiers in your application. You will have a front end. You will have a middle tier. You might have a data layer. And you might want to deploy, configure, install, scale all of these tiers in different ways, right? So you don't. So how do you manage that with containers? So that's what I kind of wanted to spend time on next. One of the things that Docker supports is this idea called linking. The basic idea here is if you have two containers running on the same host, you can network those containers together. Now, what that means is the Docker daemon, right, the Docker engine, which is running on the host machine, essentially acts as the network bridge between those two containers. Right? Those two containers are running in their own sandboxed environments. So as far as they are concerned, they don't know that there is actually another container running on the host. Right? That's where you get the isolation. But then you might have a situation where this container needs to talk to the other container. So how does that happen? So you can specify, when you create your containers, you can specify that this container needs to be linked to another container, in which case the Docker daemon goes ahead and creates a virtual network interface inside of that linked container and makes and networks these two containers. Right? It basically becomes a bridge, and it provides an IP address and so forth, and you're able to basically use your regular network APIs to communicate between those two containers. So that's the basic idea. So let's take a look at what this looks like. So I'll go ahead and open a terminal here. Make that a little bigger. All right. So first thing I'll do is I'll SSH into a VM that I have running on Azure. All right. Let me open a root shell here. I have a little script here to set up my environment variables. So now I have Docker running on this machine, right? So I can do Docker PS. There are no containers running right now. So the first thing I wanted to show you was how you can link containers together. So I have a little demo script here so that I don't mess up the command prompts. So the first thing I want to do is run an image for a container that I have created and put up in the Docker Hub. So essentially what this particular command does is it runs a new container, and the name of the container image is basically that, avrnju/crdataservice. I want this container to be named as crdataservice inside of Docker. I want a port mapping to be done. I want 3001 on the host to be mapped to 3001 on the container. Basically, what that means is the container is going to open up a network port and start listening on port number 3001, TCP port 3001. I want that port to be port forwarded to the host machine, right? So that's what the hyphen P tells Docker to do. So in which case, what happens is if I connect on the host on port 3001, Docker will forward that traffic to the service that is running inside the container, right? So, and hyphen D means that it's going to run in the background as a service. So I'll go ahead and start off that particular service there. That's it. So that container is now running. So if I do Docker PS, then OK, so it shows you that particular service is started. Now, this is actually a Node.js-based application that I wrote some time back. And this is basically a data service. All it does is it basically gives you some JSON. So for instance, I can say curl localhost 3001, and it gives you some data. Right, so you can think of this data service as being, in this case, a simplistic example, but that's basically my API, right? That's basically providing a REST interface for some service that I have created. Now, I also have a front end for my application, right? That basically consumes this API and then presents a user interface. So let's go ahead and spin up a container running that image. So So this particular set of command line that does exactly that. Here I have done the port mapping for 3000. And this is the key part, right? So I'm saying dash dash link CR data service. So as soon as you specify that, essentially the Docker daemon is going to go ahead and connect these two containers together into a single network. The colon CRDS is basically means that that's an alias that I want to use to refer to that container. What happens is inside of the container, the Docker daemon will go and make an entry into the hosts file, slash etc slash hosts file, and it'll make an entry with the string CRDS and provide the IP address for it, right? The IP address that it dynamically assigns or assigned for the container that we just launched. So I'll go ahead and launch that. Also, you will notice that this is a different image. This is avrnju slash crweb. So it goes ahead and spins up that container and networks these two containers together. So let's give it a second. Or two, or three. Do we have connectivity? Wow, that took unusually long. So we go ahead and do Docker PS. Now we have two applications, two containers running on this particular daemon, right? And these two containers have been linked together. Now the CR web container here is essentially the front end for my application, right? It's basically again a node application, which presents a UI that you can use, and it is listening on port 3000. So now I should be able to say curl localhost 3000, and then you know basically you see the HTML being returned by that service. So I've already gone ahead and added an endpoint for this VM on my Azure portal. So basically what that means is, you understand this setup, right? So I have this VM running inside Azure, and on that VM I have Docker, and on that Docker I have two containers running, right? Now, one of those containers is my front end, and that is listening on port 3000. Now, I obviously want to make this available to the public internet. So how do I do that? Since I've done the port mapping, the VM is actually listening on port 3000 now, and port forwarding to the 3000 on the container. So all I have to do is go to Azure and create an endpoint, right? Basically, the Azure load balancer needs to be configured to forward traffic on any port, I will choose 3000, to the 3000 on the VM. So I've gone ahead and done that, which means that now I should be able to access it from the browser here. So nerd Ubuntu VM 1.lada.net colon 3000. So now it's actually going through all those layers, right? Like the load balancer, then the VM, and then from the VM to the container, and then the container in this case has actually gone and communicated with a data service which is running on that other container and got the JSON data, and then it has basically rendered that here. In fact, you can take a look at that if you just do a Docker logs, and what did I call those? So if I say Docker logs CR web, it's going to show me some the fact that it got a GET request. So this is the GET request that it got when I opened probably the second one is from the browser, the first one is from curl. And you will notice that if I do the Docker logs for data service, now you see that it got a request as well, right? Now the second request was basically from the other container. So it made that request from that front-end container to the API, and then it basically showed this UI here. So if I go ahead and, for example, do a Docker stop, right, CR data service. So, Docker stop CR data service, right? So basically that means that my API is now down, right? I've stopped my API service. And I'll go ahead and refresh this page. You will still get the UI, but you see that all the data is gone now, right? So basically now it has made that call and it got a connection refused error. So basically that's gone. So so this is, you know, quickly how you can do how you can link containers. But if you think about it, all we've done now is taken two containers that are still running on the same host and connected and networked them together, right? Now this is great, but you know, there are limits to how much you can scale on a single machine, right? You can get really, really big machines on Azure. You can get the G-series VMs, which are really, really massive VMs. In fact, I think at this point in time, they are the biggest VMs that you can get, like, anywhere. We call them the Godzilla VMs. So you can do that, right? You can get the Godzilla VMs with I don't know, 400 GB of memory, right? And then you can run your workloads and sell all of your property and pay for that. Or if you want to horizontally scale your application, you typically want to do that by spinning up VMs and networking them together, right? That is what is really going to scale, because if you do that, you are eventually going to run into scaling limits if you get bigger and bigger VMs, right? At some point, you're going to say, there just aren't any bigger VMs, right? So, and that's a good problem to have if you have that problem. So how do you do that? That's where container orchestration comes into the picture. So linking containers doesn't really scale. And even if you do manage to come up with your own solution for linking containers and networking them, you can do that, right? You can install some kind of a proxy software on your VM that takes your traffic and then, you know, basically does the appropriate forwarding and so forth. But it is complicated, right? And it's very hard to get right. So there are tools that do this for you, right? So called as orchestration tools. They internetwork containers across hosts. They do things like health checks, which are very important, right? So what happens when an application running inside a container stops responding, right? Or maybe it crashes and it gets killed. So you want an external agent which is monitoring the health of your containers and then takes appropriate action. Like if something goes down, then you want to spin it up, ensure availability, and so forth. There are lots of solutions out there. So, you know, lots of orchestration solutions. This is a problem that somehow the industry seems to love to solve. So there is Apache Mesos is a project that does this for you. There is Fleet from CoreOS, Kubernetes from Google. Swarm and Compose are solutions from Docker that allows you to define applications and deploy them to cluster of containers running on multiple virtual machines. Panamax is an orchestration solution from CenturyLink, a company called CenturyLink, and so on and so forth. The good news is Azure has, you know, you can absolutely run all of these orchestration solutions on Azure, right? So let's take a look at a couple of them. The first one I want to talk about was Docker Swarm. Swarm is a project from Docker, and it is a cluster management solution. The basic idea behind Swarm is, let's say you have a bunch of Docker VMs, right? So you have spun up five VMs wherever in some public cloud. Now, Swarm basically creates an abstraction layer in front of your five virtual machines and gives you a view as if there is only one host, right? One Docker host. That is the basic idea. So you have five virtual machines, all of them running their own Docker engines, and then you install Docker Swarm on one of them or on a completely different machine dedicated for running the Swarm server. And then basically now you get a new Docker endpoint which essentially manages the cluster for you, right? I guess the best way to do this is to do a demo. So let me just wrong machine. Okay, so I have a little script that I have put together. It's all available on GitHub, so you can go play with it if you want. What the script does is it basically spins up a cluster of virtual machines with Docker pre-installed for you. So if this is available on, so you can go to github.com/avranju/Azure Swarm. So basically you can get the script from there and you can run it yourself. But essentially what it does is it essentially goes ahead and spins up a cluster of VMs for you, right? So in this case, first it creates a virtual network and then creates a bunch of virtual machines inside of that virtual network and then creates an SSH config file so that you can SSH into that. So I've already done this. So I have my SSH config here. So basically what I've done is I've created, maybe I'll show you those VMs, Azure VM list. I've created four VMs, one called a Swarm Master, and then Swarm 00, Swarm 01, Swarm 02, right? So basically, four VMs. The idea is I'm going to install the Swarm management agent on Swarm Master, and I'm going to have it manage Swarm 01, 02, and 00 as the nodes. So here you can see that there's Swarm 0, 01, and 02, and there's Swarm Master. So what I'll do is first I'll go ahead and SSH into Swarm Master. So now I'm inside the Swarm Master VM. So I'll go ahead and create, again, I have my cheat sheet of commands over here. So the first command that needs to be run is, first I'll set up my environment variable so that I can connect to the Docker server, the Docker service that is running on this machine. So that is basically specified like that. So now I can do Docker version and whatnot, and it'll be able to communicate. The first thing I do is I run an image called as swarm, right? So Docker runs swarm, and then I give it a command called create. So what does it do? It gives me an ID, and this ID is called as a cluster identifier, right? So what I'll do is I'll copy that, and I'll put that into this window over here. So what is this cluster ID, right? So right now, Docker Swarm uses the Docker Hub service, for the initial hookup between the Swarm Master and the Swarm nodes. And it uses this particular identifier to provide that hookup. So the basic idea is, first you get a token like this by running swarm create, right? So I hope that is clear, right? When I said Docker run swarm, I'm running an image called swarm, right? The swarm itself is a Docker image, right? I'm running an image called swarm, and then I'm providing the command line parameter create. So now that I have this token, what I can do is I can go ahead and connect to my nodes and then hook them up to this particular cluster. So I'll open a new shell here. I'll go into that same folder. So I'll say SSH hyphen F SSH config swarm 00. All right. The same thing. I'll specify my connection settings here. 2375. So let's make sure that that is running. So now essentially what I'm doing is I'm running this command here. And I'll specify this cluster that I just created, the cluster ID. So in this case, all I'm doing is I'm saying run swarm, but then now use the join command and provide the IP address of the master. Just another 3 minutes. And provide the IP address of this master, and then provide the cluster, right? So as soon as I do that, it goes ahead and joins this particular node, swarm 00, to that particular cluster. And we'll go ahead and do the same thing for swarm v1, swarm 01. So now I have two machines in it. I'll not connect the third one because we don't have time. And then now I can go ahead and run this particular command on the Swarm Master. So again, I'll supply the cluster here. So in this case, what I'm doing is I'm running swarm manage, right, and providing the cluster ID. So in this case, what's going to happen is it's going to spin up a service, and that service is essentially going to manage the two nodes that I have connected to that cluster, right? So I'll go ahead and run, hit enter, so that container is running now. So now if you want to list all the nodes that are there in that particular cluster, I can run the swarm list command. So I can do that. Right, so when I do swarm list, it gives me the IP addresses of the two nodes that are actually running on that machine. Another thing that you will notice is when I ran the swarm manage, I provide a port mapping for 2377 to 2375. What that means is now I have swarm manage running on this machine, listening on port 2375, which has been mapped to 2377 on the host. So this is where Docker is. This Docker Swarm is unique. Now you have a virtual Docker engine, right, managed by Swarm. and that is in turn managing the other clusters. So what this means is, now I can change my Docker host to look like this. TCP:// 0.0.0. Instead of 2375, now I can say 2377 as the port, right? Whoops, 2377. Now, if I do Docker version, one thing you will notice is, now it is connecting to the Swarm agent. So now you see that Swarm server version has changed to 0.1.0, right? So now that we are connected to the Swarm agent, you can do pretty much whatever you want, right? Just like before. For instance, if I want to go ahead and run that that service that we created earlier, I can go ahead and do that. So now I ran the CR data service on that cluster. So if I do Docker PS, what you will notice is it actually tells you on what node it allocated that particular service, right? It's actually running on Swarm 0.1. So in fact, if you now SSH into Swarm 0.1 and do Docker PS, you will find that container running on that node, right? So from this, I have launched that. I can also run the other option here. So in this case, I'm running the front end, and I've also done the linking. So because I've done the linking, it actually scheduled that also to run on the same node because those have been linked together. But you know, in this case, I've explicitly requested linking. But otherwise, it can actually run pretty much anywhere. So for instance, if I say Docker run Redis, right? I want to run a Redis service. So that particular service got allocated to Swarm 0.1. So let's run another Redis instance, right? Now this one also got allocated to 0.1. So let's say that we need 2 gigabytes of memory, right? Let's see if that causes it to, there are no resources available for that. So I ran another instance, and did that also go to 0.1? Okay, for some reason it's not connecting to 0.2 in this case. Let's launch yet another one and see what happens in that case. Okay, so for them, I think probably I missed something up, or maybe the Docker agent running on Swarm 0.2 has probably stopped, or something might have happened in that case. That's probably why the manager is not able to connect to the Docker agent running on Swarm 0.2. But in the typical case, what happens is when you say Docker run, the Swarm manager is the one that is actually controlling which agent, or basically it is using an algorithm to determine which particular node that particular container should be deployed, right? So that's what Swarm does. We don't have time to take a look at Kubernetes or Compose. Kubernetes is also a clustering solution. This one is from Google. But the basic idea here is I find that this is somewhat more feature-rich and more capable than Swarm. Swarm is still kind of undergoing extensive engineering. Kubernetes also has support for things like replication, where you can create a DOM container and have that multiple copies of it spinned up. It does health monitoring and so forth. If you have questions, feel free to look me up. Here are some references if you want to take a look at that app, the Swarm script, and so forth. Those are available on GitHub. So that's pretty much it. If you have questions, I'll hang around. I'll get off the stage so the next speaker can, or probably it's lunch now. I'll get off the stage and you can talk to me. Or can we take questions? Is that possible, Samiksha? I can take 2 questions. Yes. I can't hear you. Could you have a mic, please? Okay, the question is Docker Swarm across the host? Yes. So in our case, we created 2 nodes, right? And then Docker Swarm is the one. So we say Docker run an image name, and Swarm is going to basically take that command and schedule it on one of the containers, and that on one of the hosts. Right, so Swarm 1 or Swarm 2 or how many other machines you have in that cluster. So the question is the Docker run command, how much RAM and how much CPU does it take? So like I said earlier, right, you're essentially running processes. So it depends on your workload. So in this case, I'm running a node app. So whatever overhead node takes. That's typically what, I mean, you will have some amount of overhead for the Docker engine and the fact that a sandbox is there that is basically virtualizing resources for you. But I found that in all, for all practical purposes, that's practically negligible. So the question is, if I have 8 GB of RAM, can I configure a particular container to use only 2 GB of RAM? Yes, absolutely. So when you say Docker run, you can say hyphen M, specify how much GB, how much RAM you want to allocate for that container, and then Docker will ensure that it gets only that much RAM.
Sorry to interrupt. Guys, we'll have to break for lunch. Thank you for listening patiently. You can have your lunch outside. Raj, if you're available outside during the at the lunch area,
yep.
You can
I'll
ask questions.
I'll hang around. You can ask me questions.
Next session will start sharp at 2, so I request you all to please come back to this hall at 1:55. Next session starts at 2 p.m. Thank you.